Lunchtime Live with Andrea Gilligan on News Talk.
Ask the GP with Dr. Nina Burns with us in studio this afternoon, who's a GP at Generation Health Medical Clinic. Nina, good afternoon.
Hi.
087 1400 106, that is the number for your health questions today. This listener, Nina, says their period cramps are so severe they can't function the entire week, can't eat, can barely sleep, nausea, dizziness, occasional fainting as well. I was put on the Mirena coil, it helped with my PMDD, but I'm still cramping quite severely. I'm wondering what other options do I have, if I could ever become pregnant, so I'm not adverse to any procedures that could impact it. No doctor seems to take me seriously because the cramping, they say, is normal.
First of all, I'm so sorry that you're experiencing this discomfort. So first of all, severe cramping is not normal, and it's also something that can be managed. So, you know, no woman should have to go through painful periods every month. The second thing in this is when a Mirena coil is put in, it usually stops the lining of the womb building up. So most women with a coil will either have no period, or if they do get periods, they'll be incredibly light. Okay, so there's nothing to shed. So again, you're not shedding the lining of a thick lining of a womb, which is what would result in a heavy period. So I guess what makes me worry on this is, why is the person having pain? And I suppose something I would think about is endometriosis. Mm. So basically with the coil in, you can still ovulate, which means you might still release an egg. So you might still get the change in hormones that allows kind of the endometrial lining to build up. It's not going to build up inside your womb because the coil is there and it changes the hormone shift slightly. But I suppose it doesn't necessarily stop endometriosis, and that might be why you have the pain. So, you know, first of all, find a doctor who takes you seriously. And second of all, maybe look at being referred to somebody who can look at this for you, because you shouldn't be in severe pain. And there can be other things going on as well. But that needs to be looked at. And I'm so sorry that this person has to write
The knock-on effect, obviously, to their daily life as well. You know,
nobody. I mean, it's not just for periods. No, you know, we have modern medicine. Nobody should be suffering severe pain for any reason. It is manageable. We then need to figure out what's causing the pain, or we need to treat it. And I feel really strongly about that.
Well, good advice then for that listener, to know that they should, you know, go to the GP and look and get that advice that that they deserve to receive. 087 1400 106 is the number. This listener says they have a constant feeling of phlegm in their throat, Nina. It only started about 2 weeks ago. It's making my stomach feel sick. I'm wondering, how can I get rid of it?
Yes, we talk a lot about this, don't we? So, I mean, you know, constant feeling of phlegm in your throat. So that feeling in your throat is either coming down from above, up from below, or it's irritation in the throat. So we think of the three areas, and we have to figure out which one it is. I mean, a simple one, especially kind of now coming into spring, is it hay fever flaring? Do you have a dripping into your throat that's irritating your throat? Heartburn is another one. Or do you have something going on in your lungs and you actually have phlegm? So you need to go to a doctor. They need to tease it out. They'll ask you questions. They'll examine you and try and figure out what the cause is. And then hopefully in you know, listing a cause, they can offer you some treatment, which will help that.
Follow on question, just similar to that. Listener says they have a very dry and scratchy throat for the past few days. They're taking honey and lemon, not making any difference. Is it likely I'll need an antibiotic, or could I try anything else?
You know, so an antibiotic doesn't get rid of pain. I always say that antibiotics only treat bacteria, and bacteria, a symptom of a bacterial infection wouldn't usually be a dry and scratchy throat. It would usually be more, you know, fever, pain, difficulty swallowing, stuff like that. So dry and scratchy is more irritated. Certainly, again, trying an antihistamine can help. Taking some, you know, starting with paracetamol as a simple painkiller can help. And certainly the old, you know, lemon and honey and all of those things that soothe. And even taking a sip of water very frequently, anything that soothes the throat. But again, if it's ongoing, do go see your doctor and they'll try and figure it out.
Okay. Listener says, I have severe neck tightness and pain radiating to my shoulders down to trapeze muscle area, with heaviness and tingling to my right arm down to my fingers. Poor mobility, exacerbated by sitting and lying in bed. I'm often actually waking during the night as well with the pain. Better when I'm up walking around. Any help or advice, please?
So that's interesting in the pain. You know, when we, as doctors, when we look at someone's pain, we're teasing out the nature of the pain. And so we ask, usually one of the questions we'd ask is your pain better moving, or is it better with rest? So wear and tear pain, what we call osteoarthritis, often is better when someone rests. So the classic person with the dodgy knee, that, you know, the knee is sore when they're moving, then they sit down, it improves. Pain that's worse on resting. So pain that wakes you at night or gets worse when you move would imply inflammation. And certainly what this person is describing, it could be some inflammation in the neck. They might have disc issues or something. So again, they should go see someone. They need to be examined and to figure this out.
A 40-year-old female listener, Nina, says they have a prolapsed hemorrhoid since yesterday. They've never had it before. They're absolutely crippled, can barely walk. They're taking over the counter paracetamol and a topical cream, which they started yesterday as well. Is it a matter of waiting for days, or is there anything else I can take or do? I'm rarely ill and this feels really debilitating.
I know people are often embarrassed to talk about hemorrhoids, aren't they? You know, hemorrhoids are varicose veins in the back passage. So anything puts pressure into the back passage is going to cause them to flare. And then when it prolapses, it's like a little bit of the vein drops down and then you get this tiny blood clot. And they're excruciatingly painful because it's this swelling with this hard little clot. Now, the clot will dissolve over a couple of days, but it's incredibly painful. I think anyone's had them, you know, would say that they really feel like they can't sit down. I mean, if it's very severe, sometimes we refer people to A&E and they actually lance them and release the clot, which is uncomfortable, but it gives immediate relief of pain. Mm. In the majority of cases, this is not necessary. And obviously, they don't like to do it unless they have to. Go to your doctor. You can get Sharaprox suppositories as well, apart from the cream. You can use them a few times a day. And there are other similar ones, but they have a local anaesthetic, a bit of steroid. An old trick from a midwife is that you get a glove and you put water into it. So you make icicles.
Yeah.
And you're not putting that up inside. When you take it, then put a bit of like kitchen paper over it and just lie on your side and lie the icicle in there in the cleft between the sort of two cheeks of the anal area. And the coldness causes the vessels to constrict and it can help it shrink a little bit.
Okay.
So purely from a relief point of view, putting something really cold can help. But do talk to someone. And if it's really, really painful, do go see someone because they can be excruciating.
And what is it typically, will it pass in a number of days?
Yeah. Like, so basically it's, you know, a thrombosed pile or, you know, a prolapsed pile is this clot, and it does dissolve itself over a few days, but it can be very painful. So it is worth someone looking at it. And as I said, occasionally, not as much as they used to, you know, you can go to A&E or one of those clinics and they sometimes lance them and release the clot, and that does give you some relief.
Please ask Dr. Nina about bad insomnia. I was awake from 2 a.m. until about 6:30 a.m. this morning. My own doc has previously prescribed 25 mil of melatonin, and although it helps to get me to sleep, it doesn't keep me asleep during the night. Bedtime is usually around 10:30, going to sleep around 11 after 30 minutes if I'm reading a book. Any advice?
Yes, so what this person has is early morning wakening. So they're falling asleep, but then they're waking up and they're finding it hard to fall back to sleep. So it's one of the types of insomnia. There are lots of different causes. So when you look at insomnia, you know, we always talk about, you know, the room, it needs to be cool, dark and quiet. We need it to be like a cave. No blue lights before bed. A really simple thing is no caffeine from about 3 o'clock. Irish people are very fond of their cup of tea at bedtime.
Yeah.
But the caffeine does impact your ability to sleep. Alcohol before bed will help you fall asleep, but it will not help you stay asleep, and you will wake early in the morning when that alcohol wears off. So having a drink to help you sleep is not a good idea. Other than that, so melatonin sometimes works better at lower doses and taking it 3 hours before bed rather than a high dose an hour before bed. Magnesium in some people, it's a really simple solution, but some people find taking magnesium supplements help sleep and they help relax the muscles. So these are all really simple over-the-counter things you can do. Antihistamines, some of the older antihistamines are helpful with people sleeping. So these, again,
really?
Talk to your pharmacist. Yeah, so things like Pyritin or Phenergan, which would be the older ones that make you sleepy. Some people find they help them sleep. Now, you wouldn't use them indefinitely, but to get over a period of insomnia, that can help. And if that's not working, do talk to your doctor. They can help explore it a bit more, see what's waking you. Certainly, if there's any stress or anxiety, that can play a role. And there is actually specific CBT for sleep. There are therapists who do specific, you know, short sort of about 6 sessions of cognitive behavioral therapy, specifically looking at difficulties with sleep, and it can be really helpful. So, you know, sleep deprivation is a form of torture.
Absolutely.
So it is important for everyone that's looked after.
Listener's 46 years of age, Nina, so she's very worried. She's been called back for a 3D mammogram and ultrasound after a routine mammogram. Her last mammogram was about 1.5 years ago, and she has dense breast tissue. She's quite worried. Any thoughts?
So look, it's always really worrying when you're going through some tests and procedures. And, you know, so I suppose this is why we do screening. Remember that when we're screening people, we're looking to find things really early and treatable. And so anything that they notice on a routine mammogram, they're going to call you back. They're going to look into it more. And it sounds like they're doing all the appropriate tests. It doesn't mean there's definitely something wrong. And sometimes those tests are done. It turns out to be something very simple. But also, even if something that needs treatment is found, often it's found at an earlier stage. And that's why we're doing the screening. So it's reassuring that you had a normal mammogram a year ago.
Yeah.
Also, with dense breasts, we're becoming much more proactive at looking at them in more detail, because we know that sometimes if they're very dense, that the simple mammograms aren't as accurate as maybe some more detailed mammograms. So don't be afraid to ask your doctor questions. You should be involved in the conversation all along the way, but it sounds like you are being brought through the system. And look, I hope it all turns out to be something very benign for you.
Just very finally, 28-year-old type 1 diabetic looking to start Ozempic, overweight just slightly, they say. What do they need to do to start it?
So they need to talk to the doctors who are looking after their diabetes. It is actually a licensed treatment for diabetes and they will look at their medication. But type 1, it's more used in type 2, I have to be honest, because it's type 1, you use your insulin. So there are some type 1 diabetics are diagnosed later in life. But so this would be very specialised. If you're type 1 diabetic diagnosed early, Ozempic might not be the right treatment, but talk to the people looking after you and they can help you with that.
Dr. Nina Burns, GP at Generation Health Medical Clinic. Nina, thanks a million for joining us here on Lunchtime Live. As always, you can get more from Nina on X at Dr. Nina Burns or check out her website at generationhealth.ie.
Lunchtime Live with Andrea Gilligan. Weekdays at midday on News Talk. Conversation that counts.